Imagine you've been playing the violin for some 35 years. You know how it works. You know how to tune it. Then you're handed repertoire where each piece of music requires a different tuning. And there's 15 of these sonatas. It was a little bit overwhelming, a little bit daunting, but Boston Baroque managed to do it when they put on a 3-hour-long concert performing all of the mystery sonatas by Bieber. The concertmaster is Christina Day Martin, and their founder and artistic director is Martin Perlman. Recently, they offered the inside story behind their latest 2-CD recording, and that's what this week's episode of New Classical Tracks is all about from American Public Media. I'm Julie Elmacher. Martin, let's start by having you just give a brief description of Boston Baroque and how you decided to create it back in 1973, and what's the mission of this ensemble?
Boston Baroque was the first period instrument orchestra in the United States, or at least it's the one that's continued as the oldest one. And the idea was that people were, both players and audiences, were getting very interested in the sounds of Baroque instruments. And I got together people who at the time were the only ones I knew who were really good on these instruments. It was a very small group. I started with 8 people. And then over the years, there were more people available. I was able to expand the orchestra. I was able to add a chorus. And then just to complete the repertoire of our period, we started doing operas as well. We sometimes do very large productions. We just did Fidelio of Beethoven, for example, which is a very large orchestra and soloists and chorus.
Now, I know you've also been nominated for 4 Grammy Awards, and you, Martin, are the only conductor from a period instrument ensemble who has performed on the Grammy Awards. Is that still true?
It is still true. I think it may stay true because they don't seem to have classical music as part of it anymore. So this was, I think, in the mid-90s that I did that. But since then, they've dropped classical music from the live shows.
What did you perform on the show?
Well, we had just gotten a nomination for Messiah, Handel's Messiah. And so they called me and said that we had gotten the nomination, and also a soul group had gotten the nomination for a soul version of Messiah, and they'd like us both to do Hallelujah, of course. So that's what I did.
Christina, tell me when you joined Boston Baroque and when you became the concertmaster, if those two are not the same.
No, they are not the same. I joined Boston Baroque in 2003, and I believe I became full-time concertmaster 2007, I believe, around then, maybe 8. I'm looking to Marty. He's nodding. That's somewhere
something
around
like
there.
That, yeah.
Something like that. I played a few concerts and then became full-time concertmaster maybe around 2007 or 8.
You're celebrating a pretty phenomenal composer who was also a violinist on your latest project, The Mystery Sonatas, by Heinrich Franz von Bieber. Tell me, what are those mystery sonatas?
It's a set of 15 sonatas plus a solo piece, a piece for unaccompanied violin, but the sonatas are for violin and continuo accompaniment. And the 15 sonatas each represent one of the mysteries of the Rosary, which Bieber's employer, the Archbishop, was very involved with. Each one has an engraving next to it in the score that shows a scene from that particular episode in the life of either Jesus or Mary. And so you go through this whole set of 15. It's really unified in that way. And then end with a solo Passacaglia for violin alone. It's quite an experience, whether somebody who's involved with the religious side of it or not. It's a very emotional, moving experience.
What's interesting to me is we have 3 sets of sonatas, and each at least by the title, is to reflect perhaps a different type of mood. Yet that's not necessarily what you hear in the sonatas when you listen to them.
Yeah, it's interesting. They don't, in a way, tell a very specific story. It's not like, say, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, where you get exact depictions of things. In a few cases, you do, but it's more of a general contemplative feel. And sometimes you wonder why, in a sad part of the story or in a very tragic part of the story, is there suddenly a moment of dance? There's no answer to that. Each person takes it as they will, and you know, it's possible that some of the sonatas may have been adapted from earlier pieces or not, but you just have to take it as a general kind of contemplative work. But overall, I think that going through the 15 of them, you do feel the general progression.
Why are these so rare?
I think they're rare partly because they're extremely difficult, and they make tremendous demands, both on the player and the instrument itself, because Bieber, as you said, was a virtuoso violinist, but he also did a lot of experimenting, and every one of these 15 sonatas has the open strings tuned to a different set of notes, and so you have to just adapt and change your thinking for each sonata. It's very difficult to play them in tune, to get the violin to stabilize in that tuning. Plus, it's virtuosic music in its own right, but the tuning makes it a problem that you really don't run into in other music, even in contemporary music. The opening sonata has the standard tuning for a violin in fifths and the notes that it's always tuned to. But then, yes, every other sonata has a different tuning, but some of them are very extreme. Some of them put strings, especially the lower strings, so high that you really are at risk of breaking them. But tuning them that way changes the sound of the violin for each sonata. You get a different kind of sonority for each one, and it can be very dark for certain sonatas and very bright for others. But on the recording itself, before each sonata, Christina plays across the open strings so that you hear how they're tuned. And then she pauses and begins the sonata. So one of our listeners was saying to me that he had just tapped the forward button and listened to the beginning of every sonata so that he heard one tuning after another to hear how different they were from each other.
Christina, what is most challenging for you other than trying to keep your instrument in tune?
Well, I would say, I mean, the challenges of the Mystery Sonata, both mentally and physically, are extreme. And I was most concerned, I have to say, with playing all of them in their entirety with physical stamina. So I focused a lot on getting myself in shape and doing a lot of physical exercise to strengthen myself to be able to have the stamina for this 3-hour concert. That was a challenge for sure. And there is a kind of mental focus that is unusual in these pieces, of course, because of the mind games and all the different tunings. It requires a special kind of concentration. But what I didn't expect, actually, was that there is also a kind of spiritual endurance involved when you play them all through in one evening. And I think, for me, what was most profound and revelatory about playing this work in its entirety was that it became for me a spiritual journey, a kind of timeless musical pilgrimage.
And that kind of gets back to that original idea that even though it says it's telling us the story of Jesus and his life, it's really more of moments of reflection and opportunities to kind of get into your own space. Wow, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it was a very powerful experience to play them in one evening. I have to say, I've never experienced something quite like that in a solo concert. I've had similar emotions and a profundity in playing, for instance, St. John Passion or St. Matthew's or Bach B minor Masses, you know, these 3-hour concerts, and you feel the journey, the spiritual journey. But I guess I'd never had all of the responsibility on myself, with of course the help of my colleagues, but to have to portray this drama of the story and the drama for that length of time.
So they're really, I mean, would you say that there are more demands on you than the other performers because you're so front and center, the violin is?
I think no one could argue with that. But
as one of the other players, I would say there are definitely more demands on the violinist than on the others. I mean, we had to improvise our parts because there's only a bass line. But if I could just say something about the kinds of demands that were on the violin, when she's reading the notes, they are different notes to read from what is sounding, because he writes it as if you're putting your fingers in the normal places, but because the strings are untuned, different notes are coming out. So you have to make that shift for each sonata and get used to kind of turning off one part of your brain and turning on another. And it also means that she has to put fingers in slightly different places for each sonata to really get them in tune. So there is a tremendous mind game as you go from one sonata to the next to really make it consistent, and it's extreme in these sonatas.
And if I may add that number 11 is always focused on, but for good reasons, where the violin has the two middle strings cross, the A and the D strings. So you loosen the strings and you switch the places of the strings behind the bridge and the peg box there is a cross, and so where the A string usually is now a D string, and now where the D string is an A string. And I have to say that is by far the most challenging one, at least for me. The other sonatas, I find once you've learned the language of each sonata, it's sort of like a new language for each one, it sticks with you and you can just turn that part of your brain on. But I have found with number 11 that I just can never get used to the fact that those two strings are crossed. And he also writes in that sonata a lot of double stops for those two strings in particular. So, you know, I've spent 35 years learning to put more weight on the D string when you play a double stop, an A D string double stop. And now I don't think about that anymore. It's instinct to put more weight, but then suddenly you have to think about it in the first place and then reverse your thinking, and if that makes sense.
That's another number 11 is called The Resurrection. And because of that, he wanted you to literally see a cross on the violin. And so he crosses over those two strings, and that is all violinist instincts of having the thicker strings on the bottom and gradually thinner strings as you go higher are reversed. So it's a special challenge.
And there's a really bright quality to that piece, too, I noticed. I think that is one that does kind of represent musically what it is trying to represent, at least to my ear. Now, one of the things I was curious about, too, is how did Bieber choose the instrumentation that would go along with this violin? Because in The Resurrection, for example, we have organ, whereas in other pieces there's harpsichord or theorbo. Do you know how he chose the instrumentation?
Well, he didn't choose the instrumentation. I think in the manuscript it just says violin with basso continuo.
Yeah.
And so it's up to the performers to decide what to use. You know, you can use organ, harpsichord, cello. We used Baroque guitar, theorbo. There are a number of possibilities.
Yeah. We use them in different combinations for different pieces, but that was our instinct. It wasn't an instruction from Bieber.
I see. So how did you decide what to do? I mean,
well, it was really, I think, just getting to know the pieces and deciding what kind of sound we wanted to hear for them. So that, for example, that Resurrection Sonata that you mentioned has a hymn in it, and it just felt more grounded and appropriate to use an organ instead of a bright harpsichord. And for some of the very bright ones, some of the more joyous ones, like the Assumption of the Virgin. We added a Baroque guitar because it has a little more raucous feel to it, and it contributed to that feeling of the piece.
I know, Christina, that you have to use many different instruments. Is that correct? Because the tunings, especially when you're in a live performance, are so extreme, you couldn't possibly do that in a live setting, right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, I chose to use 6 violins last year when we played them all in one evening in Jordan Hall. 2 of them I designated only for one sonata, the Resurrection, which has to stay with the strings crossed. You can't be retuning that one. And then for number 8, I decided to designate only one violin for that one because the G string on that one is tuned up to a D, so it goes up a fifth, and I have broken so many G strings trying to get the G, and this, the last time I played it again, I, you know, broke 3 G strings just trying to get it up to a D. So once I've gotten it there, I just want to leave it to let the violin settle, and then I just pray that it won't happen in the concert. And then for the other 4 violins, they just are retuned. I have a tuner backstage who will, I'll play the first sonata, then she comes out, hands me another violin that's tuned for number 2. I hand her the violin from number 1. She goes backstage, retunes it for another sonata. And then once I'm done with number 2, she comes out. We trade off violins the entire concert for each sonata. I'm handed a different violin. That's how I chose to make it.
Yeah,
work.
Thank goodness for that, because what if you grab the wrong instrument for the wrong piece? It's like, you know, grabbing the wrong luggage on the carousel at the airport.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well,
She did put little stickers with numbers on the backs of them.
Yeah, I do. I make it very clear for my colleague so that isn't a problem.
So how long did it take you to master these sonatas?
I mean, I've been working on these pieces on and off for the last 15 years. So that's been in and of itself a kind of journey for me. And I think, you know, they're pieces that just need time to internalize and to find your own voice for them and interpretation. I find that, I mean, I feel a real affinity for Bieber and his music, but I don't find his music always straightforward in how one would interpret it, and you see a great variety of interpretations, and I think it just takes a certain amount of time to really get to know them on a deeper level and internalize them and be comfortable performing them. A lot of this music has long fantasy-like passages where the performer can take a lot of freedom in whatever way they feel is appropriate. Though he does have a lot of dance movements as well, which those, you know, have a much stronger rhythmic impulse, that there isn't as much freedom there. Mm-hmm. love that contrast in his music. I find his music very visceral and full of drama and expressive power.
He's a tremendously inventive composer.
Do each of you have like a favorite sonata or a section that you could bring to the forefront so that I could use that as an example in sharing with our listeners?
One of my favorites is number 6, The Agony in the Garden. Number 10 is also wonderful, very dramatic, powerful. But if I had to choose one, I think I would choose number 14. I think we both really love number 14, the Assumption of the Virgin Mary.
That one is just tremendously joyous, and it builds up a momentum that you just irresistible. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, at the very end, the violin drops out right before the end and leaves just the continuo to finish. And it's a very strange thing, and people sometimes wonder why. And one story that has been suggested, and it's quite possible, is that this is the Assumption of the Virgin, and as she's going up into heaven, she disappears, leaving us here on earth with the bass line. So, which is a funny thought, but it's quite possible that that's what he's doing. It's a very unusual ending.
Now, I know, Christina, you touched on this earlier, but I'm curious what you each learned about yourselves as you were putting this project together.
Well, I think that regardless of your religious beliefs, or even if you think of yourself as a spiritual person or not, that this music really transcends all that and connects the performer and the listener to, you know, the suffering and agonies of the human experience.
Beyond the, you know, the depiction of the mysteries, that we're kind of confronting Bieber as a person. And we don't know a lot of details about his life, some external details, but you just felt this incredible personality in this music, and you felt like you were involved with him, not only with the story. And you don't get that with every composer.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Elmacher.